on our live line, the woman of the moment, the calmest person in the eye of the storm. She must have had a little of God in her yesterday. I'm talking about our superintendent of public instruction, Glenda Ritz, because she was almost like the folk in the lion's den. Except she was surrounded by all these other people that was trying to get at her, and she was the calmest person in the room. Superintendent, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Dave. Thank you, Amos.
At one point, after I got off the air, I went upstairs, turned the meeting on, turned the video on, and you were getting jumped on, and your voice was kind of angry, but then the way they were shooting the video, I could see your legs, and your leg, I would have been banging my feet and kicking, and you were just your legs and your feet were just the calmest folks there.
Well, that's my demeanor. I try to run all my meetings in a calm fashion. When I have points to make, I want to make them, and just get on with business.
Now, as I understand it, you were charged with the responsibility of getting back to the Secretary of Education, to the Department of Education, on how we're going to satisfy to make sure that we were doing the things we need to do to comply with No Child Left Behind. You turned in your recommendations and your suggestions to the department, and I understand the Governor's Education and Innovation Agency actually sent a document to the Federal Department of Education nitpicking and undercutting what you submitted. I've never heard of such a thing.
Well, I hadn't heard of such a thing either, but I wasn't really surprised. The Governor's Center for Education and Career Innovation, the members that are hired that work with the State Board of Ed staff, they critique what we do at the department all the time. So I wasn't surprised that they did their own 28-page chart critique, going through the waiver, but actually submitted it to the U.S. Department of Education. I contend that, first of all, I don't know why that would happen. We're all supposed to be in this waiver together, making sure we have a joint effort in submitting the waiver. So I was taken aback that it was submitted, but I certainly wasn't surprised at the critique.
One of the other things, as I was sitting in my office after I got off the air, they had adopted some new rules based on, or they were getting ready to do some things based on, Robert's Rules of Order, and these were the new rules that were set back in the fall y'all were fussing and feuding. And one of the rules was if somebody wanted to appeal a ruling of the chair, that's an automatic, non-debatable, let's vote on the motion. And I remember from my days in college running meetings in Robert's Rules that is the rule. If somebody wants to appeal the ruling of the chair, you don't have a debate on that. You either vote, yeah, we sustain the chair, or no, we don't. But the State Board of Education started to forget their own rules. Do they not read the rules they make?
Well, first of all, we don't follow Robert's Rules.
Okay, all right.
We actually, when I first took office, I felt this strong need to develop what I called board procedures.
Mm-hmm.
So I approached the governor right away. And I said, you know, I'd like to meet with your staff and actually come up with some board procedures. We did that. And then, you know, some of the things that were beginning to happen at the start of my tenure. And so then we got together with NASB, which is the National Association for, State Boards,
right.
And we worked these procedures out. These procedures are my introduction,
mm-hmm.
Okay? But ever since we've introduced them, there's been efforts to get them to the point where we continue to try to dwindle what it is that are my rights within the chair of the board. And so the meeting before, we have in our board procedures about how to get new items on the agenda.
Mm.
And it's clearly written in our board procedures. An action item can only be added because, you know, we are concerned about open door.
Right.
You know, we don't want to add all these items on to an agenda that haven't been publicized.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have an emergency, we have something we want to add, it takes my okay, and it takes three other members on the board okay to put an item on the agenda.
Right.
So they brought a resolution, sight unseen, never seen it before, and at the meeting before, and I consulted with my legal staff, and I said, you know, I'm not going to, I don't see this as an item we need to put on this meeting. So they wanted to appeal that ruling. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't a ruling. It was simply something that we do, mm-hmm. okay, in order to get an item on the agenda. They felt it should have been appealable, and they should have been able to put it on the agenda despite that I didn't want to put it on the agenda. And so that's where all of this board procedure items came this meeting. So appeal, though, is written in our board procedures that somebody appeals, we will have a second and take a vote. Mm. And that's it. So, yes, it was a little confusing for a little while, but I just simply got out the procedures and said, this is how it will be.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, did the board take any action yesterday that reduce your duties as defined by statute?
Well, my duties defined by statute, well, I guess that kind of remains to be seen, because they put forth several resolutions yesterday. Mm-hmm. And within those resolutions, Amos, there are items in there that are questionable as to whether they have the authority to direct me or my department to do them. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so a resolution is simply a resolution. It's not a rule. Mm-hmm. It's not a law. I don't even know that it has any enforceable power. And so yesterday we did pass one resolution on the board procedures to actually have an ad hoc committee to look at the procedures. And they also had in that resolution that I was going to do that yesterday. I was going to do it yesterday. I was going to assign the people yesterday, and it was going to be done. Well, our board procedures clearly give me the right to appoint the two members to that ad hoc. I get to determine when that meeting is. And so I just simply said, you know, I see that you passed this resolution, but I'm not doing this today. Mm. So that's what I mean by, you know, you can pass a resolution. You make it pass a resolution that says, hey, Linda Ritz, we don't claim you to be the chair. We're going to elect somebody else to be the chair of the board. Would that be enforceable?
Right. Let me go back to Let me go back to the waiver. When the Federal Department of Education finally gets around to responding to your waiver, who does the letter go to? Does the letter go to both you and the governor? Does the letter go to you? Who do they respond to?
Well, I will get a personal phone call from the assistant secretary of the of the department, mm-hmm. of the United States Department of Education, and I will be the first to know my department and my signature is on the submission of this waiver, and so I will get the first phone call as to, and we're expecting that probably, you know, late July. They're trying to turn around these extensions as fast as they can. They have, you know, maybe 30 states that are all having their waivers come up for extension at the same time. So they're going to be reviewing all the documents. They'll be contacting us in the meantime, seeing if they need any more information from us. We sent 300 pages worth of not only information in the waiver, but then over 100 attachments showing all, you know, what we've been doing and how we are complying with the waiver and our steps going forward. So I feel very confident in what we sent. We had numerous phone calls along the way, mm-hmm. but I will be the first to know.
On the other surprise of the meeting that I understand caught you, not only you blindsided, but members of the state board, and that is the situation with Tinley, the takeover operator of Arlington High School. I understand you didn't realize the depth, or your staff didn't realize the depth of Tinley's feeling that the economics of them doing that was so upside down that they'd walk away from it?
Well, obviously, the Department of Education has not been brought into any meetings that have been going on. And so that's a first concern, because their contract is with the Department of Education on behalf of the State Board of Ed. It's my understanding that CC, the governor's education agency, has been involved. I do know that my chief of staff was updated at least one time, but I did not know the contents of what, you know, Marcus Tinley was talking about yesterday, mm-hmm. in yesterday's meeting, and I was like, you know, actually having, you know, almost negotiations going on for MOUs as to how we might transition from Tinley back to IPS. I think members of the board have various levels of knowledge, and I think I stated that. I said it appears we all have a different little view of what's going on here.
The other thing is, and I remember there are some members of the board that were part of the process that ordered Takeover School. That was a state board of education function. They did the hearings. They received the recommendations. They made the final decision. And what struck me is there was the new law that the state legislature passed this year, House Bill 1321, that allows an independent operator to operate a school within IPS. IPS pays the overhead. The operator is in charge of the academics, and IPS gets the credit or the blame if the academics are good or bad. And it seems to me that we already got a law and a blueprint that could solve the Arlington problem, and I'm watching the State Board of Education. It sounds like they don't even know some of the laws that have been passed that affect education in this state.
Well, and I you know, that's obviously, Amos, is going to be part of the conversation once we have, now that we've formalized a true task force to get this all worked out. And you're right, 1321 comes into play here. I think part of the issue is, you know, we're towards the start of the school. How do we make that transition appropriate? And continuing with Tinley, because obviously the board has to, you know, they established this turnaround. And so it comes to some decisions that the board has to make. But you're correct. There are some frameworks in place to make some smooth transitions happen. Whether the board wants to make those transitions to happen is yet to be seen. But obviously, we're going to begin some earnest conversations on this to go forward.
Two final things. Real quickly, we had some parents in earlier that have been working with IPS School 99 Arlington Woods and IPS 93 and some programs that have seen some academic results. And I asked them, I said, I guess I'll be talking to Superintendent Ritz. What do you want me to ask him? And one parent spoke up, says, can you get more teachers' assistants in our schools and maybe get some of these college interns that want to be teachers, you know, put them on the firing line assisting teachers? That would be a great help to us. And they wanted me to mention that to you.
Well, you know, every local's budget is up to them as to how they do their priorities. And so, you know, those are aspects and decisions that are made at the IPS level. But certainly, and I'll give you an example. We lost funding a long time ago for what we used to call prime time for teacher assistants in Washington Township where I taught. But the district made it a priority to keep assistants in the lower grades. That's what they wanted to do. They saw that it was a benefit. It's been a priority for them. They worked their budget around that. So in many cases, it's not necessarily a case of can we have more money to do something. It's really a matter of how are we spending the monies and what do we want to see as a priority and where do we want to put those resources. So I think IPS is taking a look at how all that's playing out.
And finally, Superintendent, I know parents and teachers and schools all around Indiana know how their kids did in this year's I-STEP that wasn't interrupted by computer glitches and failures. When will the rest of us know?
Well, we have that's due to be released here, I guess, where they can see all those scores. And so, and then we'll be starting to calculate the grades according to that information. And I think all that's pretty much ready to be released. We were waiting. As you know, we did have some issues. I believe Fort Wayne had to wait on their scores. But I believe haven't parents been able to see their scores for their students?
No, the parents have, but we haven't. We haven't even had our I-STEP show where we celebrate what was good and we hope for the better for other schools for next year.
It's coming soon. We had to wait for Fort Wayne. Fort Wayne was a little behind because we had to actually supply them with paper to do their assessment.
That's right, they didn't do it on paper, on the computer. They did it the old school way.
So that's really why we don't have out the statewide information yet.
All right.
It's coming very, very soon.
All right, stay tuned. Hopefully before Labor Day. All right, Superintendent.
Coming soon, Amos.
Superintendent Glenda Ritz, always good to talk to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.